Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone, welcome back to your bona fide favourite pop culture podcast. Shmivy, how old are you and how are you?
What a way to start. I am 25 as of yesterday,
woo!
So feeling old. No, actually I'm not feeling old.
You're looking it.
The skin, need to get a heavier moisturiser.
Oh, shut up.
Need to get that retinol.
Need to start fucking, what does Flo always say? Use your sunscreen every day because it'll age you.
Yeah, which I do. Yeah. Which I have done for the last year or so. But I think there's a fucking huge stigma about getting old, even just 25 plus.
I know. And we actually had this really huge conversation the other day about aging, and Liv and I have always been very much in the camp of, like, I've never given a fuck about aging in terms of how it looks on me. I've always been like, wrinkles are like the sign of a good life or the sign of things you've been through. Like, yeah. I don't give a fuck. Liv and I were talking about Botox the other day and how we're sort of getting to the age where people around us are either thinking about getting it. And if you want to get it, go ahead.
Yeah.
But Liv and I were feeling like, if we're the only two people like left in our friend group that don't get it, is it like we're aging in defiance? Is it like
we're aging as
protest?
That's exactly how it feels sometimes. It feels like, okay, I'm going to try and not be swayed by this absolutely wild, like, anti-aging thing that we have going on in society and in the beauty industry and everything that's been injected to us via marketing and whatever. It's actually fucked up. And I've just been, like, watching influencers and stuff who are, like, in their mid-30s and don't have a single line on their face. And it is just, like, fair enough, you do what you want with your body. But it does just set this fucked up bar for women. Anyway, I could talk about this for ages. I'd actually quite like to do an episode on, like, aging in the media.
Same, because I've just been watching Victoria Paris. I don't know if you know who she is. She's big on TikTok. And she's, like, made this highlight about every cosmetic thing she's ever had done, like, really little things, like, just about her eyebrows, eyelashes. She got her, like, chin done, lipoed and stuff. But she's made a, highlight reel of it because she's, like, guys, you think that all of this is natural because you can't tell. None of this is natural, and I don't want you to think it is.
No, genuinely.
So, like, let me be open about it. I think there's a really good conversation to be had there.
Even the whole thing of, like, paying for really expensive vampire facials and, like, shit like that. Then it goes into the fact of, like, okay, so, like, you have to be rich to look good. Well, we always know this, but it's just on another level when it comes to female aging.
And I've just never spent that long thinking about aging until I'm just watching around me probably everyone else age and just look stunning because I've had all these things done. And then me, because I am not good at maintaining myself
on a good day.
Yeah. And so Liv and I will just be like aged normally.
Yeah, because it's something we don't want to fucking think about every day of our lives. Like, can't we just get through life without thinking about all of this expensive skincare shit that we're meant to buy? Like, there's protecting yourself with, like, sunscreen. But then there's, like,
and there's doing something nice for yourself in terms of, remember, like, when Flo told me I was dirty. And so she was like, let me help you, like, do something for yourself at the end of each day and we'll get you a skincare routine. And I was like, okay, fine.
Yeah, absolutely. But then there's, like, looking in the mirror at the end of the day, like, with your 8 different moisturizers and, like,
and a magnifying glass.
Yeah, and staring at the very tiny fine lines you've got on your forehead or whatever.
Seriously. And you're all beautiful listening to this.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Don't let anyone else or the world tell you differently.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Liv's 25. I also said at the start of this that she looked it, which is, like, hypocritical, but that was a joke, obviously, everyone. What describes your week?
What describes my week is the campus.
Okay, and same. Or mine was camping and then making it your whole personality.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
You go.
It's really funny because when Lucy and I were in high school, we went camping for the first time with, like, our guy friends, which was very like, ooh, la la, when we were 15 years old. And it's just so funny because for my 25th birthday, like 10 years later, we're literally going camping with pretty much the same group of people.
At the exact same time of year.
Yes.
Like, and to be fair, good on our parents for letting us go camping at 15. Like, I think we probably had one person on the restricted license or two people or something that were a bit older than us, drove us out there. It was our first times getting drunk properly. Like, it was, like, bad behavior.
It was bad.
It was wholesome as fuck, but it was bad behavior.
Yeah, but it was also cute as fuck. And I think now it was just, like, very weirdly nostalgic.
It was.
Going camping with that group of people. And, yeah, it was just really, really nice. Just so fucking nice to get out of the city.
Yes.
I just forget how many beautiful places are like an hour or so outside of Auckland.
I know. And I forget how much like I need it to recharge.
Oh my God. Just no screen time. My phone is dead the entire time.
There's no reception when we were. Unless you looked for it, I guess.
Exactly. Swims out on the beach, like eating communal meals. Just super, like, super cute.
Instant coffee out of plastic cup, reusable plastic cups. In the mornings while you're dusty.
All the girls brought their colouring in books.
No one even talked about it.
No, we just all like brought them with us, which was hilarious.
It was actually so cute. And Liv, I was thinking this morning, like, I have feel like I've had a few months of being really not charged or like just really not excited or like, you
just
know.
Just like functioning at that 60% battery life.
And which sucks. And then got back from camping and was like, oh my God, like, it's just I'm tired, but I feel so
but it's
tired.
A great tired. It's like a, like full body, like had the sun, had the vibes.
Yeah. Had the vibes, had the drinks.
I didn't have that many drinks, I feel, overall.
No, neither did I. I came home with a whole box full of pals because, like, just didn't need to reach for it.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Good company. Love that.
Good company.
Fantastic.
Well, that's the same as what describes my week as well. Liv, we are going to be talking today about Chris Brown. And honestly, Liv and I feel like we are living in a separate universe or there's a social experiment being done on us or something where, like, we have been researching. Obviously, we know what he did to Rihanna, and we have been researching all the other things that go into the complicated person that is Chris Brown. But, like, why is he still, like, being awarded shit, coming to awards shows, being held up on this pedestal? Like, there's just a whole lot of confusion, I think, from Liv and I.
It is. It's very strange because, as we're going to go and talk about, we live in our own kind of media sphere where everyone around us just thinks of Chris Brown as someone that is like, okay, we don't really interact with him. But that's just really not the case for a lot of the world. And where there's money to be made, people will give them a platform.
Yeah, it's just, it's honestly bizarre.
Yeah, interesting nuanced conversation with a lot of complexities to it, as fucking per usual on Culture Vulture. So we will get into that. And before we do, just a wee content warning to say that we will be talking about domestic violence. So please tune out of this episode probably entirely, unless you want to hear about Maddie Healy and the kiss that happened on stage that Lucy is absolutely green with envy about. So feel free to tune into that bit and then disregard the rest of the episode if this one's not for you.
Definitely. But yeah, before we get into that, I have to talk about Maddie Healy kissing fucking fans on stage again. So
Again.
So, well, he used to do this, and I've been deepened my 1975 Maddie Healy obsession. And he used to do this, like, back in the day. They have this song called Robbers, which is about a toxic relationship. And when they would perform it on stage, he would get people up and make out with them during this certain part of the song. It's very punk. It's, like, very Maddie Healy. It's very hot. It's just, like, any fan fiction you could ever think of coming true. Like, it is amazing. Anyway.
And he'll definitely know that. Like,
and he knows
know
that.
He is playing on that fan fiction dream.
Oh, my God. And he's just, like, I reckon he's just, he has such a good time on stage.
Yeah.
He's so in it for the art, the performance art, and this fits with the song. And so, anyway, he hasn't done that in years, right? And now they've just gone back on tour, and hasn't done it at his recent shows, but then got back into reception after camping and had all these people messaging me on Twitter and stuff like, Luce, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about this? Saw like Matty Healy cheating like as a trending thing on Twitter. And I was like, what the fuck has gone on?
Does Matty Healy have a girlfriend?
No. But it was just like a joke about just like cheating on the fandom. Cheating on the fans. And then like he retweeted something funny that was like someone holding a sign that said, welcome home, cheated. Like,
yeah, just, like if you get with one fan, you disregard all the rest. Yeah.
But like the 1975 fandom, what I love about them, because all fandoms are different, right? What I love about this one is like they bully Matty Healy and he bullies us right back. Like,
right. It's like, it's just like ripping each other out.
It is. It's just ripping each other to shreds. But the best thing about this is like I was sick with envy. Like I felt like I was 12 years old just figuring out what hormones were again. Yeah. Like honestly, I walk downstairs to Flo and Hayden, who I live with, and I like lay on the couch like a baby, like, oh my, like yelled. Like I'm so jealous. Like this kills me.
I just cannot imagine feeling that way over someone I've never met. Like it's just fucking funny to me. Like definitely had that feeling like, you know, when you have a crush on someone and like they get with someone else or whatever and it's just like, oh my God. But it's like because I've had personal interaction. Like,
I know.
But I love it. I wish I could feel those things because that's kind of fun.
No, it's so fun. I've never had it with someone that I have met.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't give a fuck about the people in my real life. No offense, everyone else.
It's better like, to imagine.
Yeah, it's better to imagine. Mm. If you are Matty Healy or Harry Styles, particularly when I was like 15 or 16, that's when I will be obsessed with you.
Yeah.
So naturally, and we should have guessed this because all the hottest, coolest, like fucking people are part of the sisterhood. The girl that Matty Healy brought on stage to kiss is a Siska follower, a Siska fan. She's a legend. Her name's Isabella.
And I loved this evolution that when you first found out, I was like, what the fuck? Like, yes. Blah, 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 blah. And then, like, you get in comms with her and you're like, okay, you're actually really fucking cool. Go, queen.
No, like, now I'm, like, proud, living my dreams, doing it for the sisters. We all want to be, like, I'm yeah. like, I love, I, honestly, I love Isabella to death now. So she wrote me a little play-by-play, which is going live in the newsletter. You can go back and read it because it's obviously out by now.
So how did you get in comms? Did she get in comms with you?
No. So I saw someone tag her on Twitter and then I was like, oh my God. And then I followed her on Twitter and she followed us on Instagram. So she was like, oh my God, I know who you are. And I messaged her just being like, holy fuck. Like, yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Love this for you. Love this happened to you. Like, would you be keen to do, like, a tell-all, only what you're comfortable with? Naturally, she was like, I fucking love you guys. Like, yes, I will. And so I was like, okay.
So sick. Fucked up that we have that sort of, like, reach of, like, these random-ass people in the world just, like, being able to get in contact with them.
I know. And, like, just what are the odds?
Yeah.
Like, it's 3 million people is a lot of people, right? But it's not like we're touching every single person
God,
in the world.
No.
So the fact that the person he made out with on stage is a Siska follower and was like, yeah, I'll tell you everything, was just, it's my favourite part of the job, I think. It makes me love this job because it's like fandom and it's also writing and it's talking to people and it's like shit that feels like it's out of a movie.
Yeah,
I'm just going to read it in her words. This is what she wrote for me. So there was a girl in the pit that had a sign on her phone that said, play girls, it's my birthday. And Maddie saw it and he said something along the lines of, no, sorry, can't do that, but I can make out with you guys. So a light bulb went on in her head and she was like, okay, noted. And then he sang a song called Me and You Together Song. And she said, the motherfucker looked at me, made some facial expressions to me while he was singing, winked, and then looked at my friend and stuck his tongue out at her. At that moment, I knew I needed to do something else to get his attention. So I typed out on my phone, so we making out, and held it up in between songs. It gets dark and he could really see it from the crowd in between songs. He came up to me and he said, what's that sign say? And read it and said, do you know robbers? And she said, I honestly didn't understand what the fuck he was saying. So I said, huh? And then he asked again and enunciated his words better. And then I said, yeah. He said, okay, come here. And she said, and when I tell you, I jumped the barricade so fast. No one helped me. I did it myself. And then she said, I get up there and security told me to just sit on the couch. And so I was like, okay. So I go to him and he asked me for my name. And then I sat down. He walked away. And when he came back to me, he gets on his knees and he says, we don't have to snog if you don't want to. And I said, oh, yes, we are. yes. And he was like, okay, are you sure? And I said, yes, and kept nodding. And you can watch the video and you can like see all of this happening because everyone's like, what's he saying when he's whispering to her? And then the other side of people are like, did he get consent?
So is this like in between songs? He's yep. like chatting to her, like just kind of like as they're getting ready for the next song.
Yeah.
And then pulls her up and then like she's sat there waiting until the song comes on.
Yeah, the song comes on. Right, and then he's singing. He's like on his knees. There's a break in the music and he's asking her like, are you okay if we snog? We don't have to do it. And she's like, yeah, we fucking do. Like she said, can we make out?
Yeah.
And so you can see this all happening in the video. He walks away, he comes back, he sits on her lap, and then he like sings to her for ages. And then she said he would leave and he would come back, but when he was leaving, he would always just be like, I'll be over here. Like real cute shit.
Oh my God.
And then she also said, side note, like he smelt like cigarettes because he is a chain smoker on stage. And then she said, anyway, he pulled me up, we sang together, and then there's this part where he always kisses the fan that's on stage and they kissed. And she said, honestly, it was just a crazy experience. I never thought it would happen to me ever. And then, side note, the next night he did this with a guy fan and it is hotter. Like Maddie Healy kissing the guy fan and then he like goes in again.
Yeah, I just watched the video and it is. It's sexy.
Hot. It's so fucking hot. And so naturally my like final question for Isabella, and there's more of this in the newsletter, so you can go and read a bit more about her and some context about how long she's loved them, et cetera, et cetera. But I was like to her, how has the fandom like reacted? I wanted to know. I'd seen on Twitter how I thought they'd reacted. Mm-hmm. Real, like, that should be me, but I'm obsessed that he's doing it again. And she was like, so far the fandom's been real nice. She's had some hate comments here or there, but it's mainly from people outside of the fandom. She also said she had to make a post clearing up that he asked her multiple times and she said yes. And she said, I am a grown, she was like, I'm 24, I'm grown, I knew what I was doing.
For sure. It's not like he's like, oh, you're a 16-year-old girl over there. You know?
And I think that was something, I mean, obviously if you want to talk about power dynamics, when there's a celebrity and there's someone that's a fan of that celebrity, there's always something going on.
But absolutely.
I think with the context of this was something he always has done, like Justin Bieber's One Less Lonely Girl. Mm-hmm. He used to bring someone on stage and like serenade her. This is like the punk edition of that.
Yeah, and like if you take it lightly, you know, it's just something
it's
fun.
Like, why can't we have nice things if we, you know,
yeah,
can't.
If we go about it the right way, which he did, which he asked for. Consent.
And then I think he, he did a similar thing with the guy he brought on stage as well. And I will try and reach out to the guy, but I can't make this our whole brand from now, just me interviewing anyone that gets kissed.
Or anyone that's ever spoken to Maddie Healy.
I'm just like, sorry, the news can wait.
Yeah, and the newsletter just becomes, okay, right, I found this person,
and
we're
here's
three steps
story.
Closer.
Yeah. So anyway, love this for Isabella, love this for Maddie. He's reliving out his robber's dreams, and he's kissing a whole lot of fucking hot people, so go
but
off.
Do you still hate it for you?
No.
Oh.
No, because it gives me hope that, like, I'm going to two of his shows in New Zealand. Like, it could be me. I don't hate
You've
it for me.
You've got to get up the front.
Oh, my God.
How are you going to do that?
Well, one of them I'm seated and one of them I'm general. And I'm general in the Wellington one, which I feel like will be smaller.
Yeah.
I think I might have to camp out.
No.
No, I'm not going to
camp out for a week. Like, we just keep walking past. Yeah. Like, hey, Luce, how you going?
I could be reporting live on TikTok from the queue.
Like, just you in your little tent, like, right, okay, it's day three.
Day three, still no one here. Don't know why I'm in the line.
Still no sign of Maddie Healy. I've been scoping out every hotel room.
I can't even do that, actually, because I need to be at his Auckland show. And I need to find where the after party is.
Oh, I think that's probably your better bet.
Yeah. So anyway,
it's a genuine connection.
We'll keep you in the loop. Well, when One Direction came to Wellington, Rubes and I went and found them at 3 a.m. in a bar, and there was just a glass window, and they were all there, knocking and
that's
waving.
That's pretty wild.
It gives me hope that can happen again. Anyway, this is a really nice story, and nice for Isabella. Naughty because it's like making out on stage, so kind of
a hot
type of naughty. But not the type of naughty that we're about to talk about right now, because Chris Brown is fucking textbook. I don't even want to say naughty because it feels like it lightens like the shit that he's put people through.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mm-hmm. But Liv, I want you to start off with why the fuck we're actually talking about Chris Brown right now. Why is he back in the media? Why are we caring now?
Yeah, you're definitely probably wondering that. And it is all because of the AMAs, which happened last Sunday. So Chris Brown was meant to be performing at the AMAs. He was meant to be doing a tribute to Michael Jackson because it was Thriller's 40th anniversary. And so basically it got cancelled. Not just because it was Chris Brown, actually not because it was Chris Brown, but it was the combination of him and him doing Michael Jackson that they just thought was too much. It's so weird to me. Like, how do they organize these events? How do they cancel it like the day before or whatever?
How did they get greenlit the whole way up until there? Like, you could have just asked one person on the internet.
No.
Or like, you know.
It's so, so strange to me. Like, these huge events must be organized, you know, from the time the one last year finished.
Yes.
I just can't understand it. So basically, he ended up not attending and then he won an award and Kelly Rowland accepted the award on his behalf. And then when she did so, people in the crowd started like booing. I mean, some people were cheering, some people were booing. And she was basically like, hang on, chill out to the crowd. And then she goes on to say like, you know, how good of a musician Chris Brown is and that she's proud of him and she loves him and blah, 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 blah. And then later on, TMZ catch up with her as she's getting in the car, and I actually have a clip about what she said about this whole situation.
I have to know your thoughts on people booing Chris. Is it sad to see?
You know what? I believe that grace is very real and we all need a dose of it. And before we point fingers at anybody, we should realize how grateful we are for every moment that we get, for even our own things that we have. I just think it's important to remember to be human. We are humans, and yeah.
Do you feel like he needs to be forgiven for, like, you know, what he did? I mean,
you know what? We all need to be forgiven for anything that we could be doing, anything that we're thinking. We all come up short in some sort of way, and grace is real, and we are humans, and everybody deserves grace, period. Have a good day, honey.
I know you too. Bye.
It's just such a weird sentiment to me. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, she's getting in the car. She's being chased by a reporter. She doesn't have time to, like, write down a really well-written statement or whatever. But just the way that she's thinking about it is so, like,
we don't have to forgive everyone for every single thing.
Well,
I feel like it strips grace from its actual context. Like, we often say when it comes to cancel culture, because we fucking hate cancel culture, that, like, you know, you need to treat that person on the internet that said the wrong thing and then gone and fixed it. You need to treat them with grace.
Yeah.
Because they've done it in public and they've gone and fixed it, and that's how society moves forward. Someone that has been charged with assault and then gone on, as you're going to hear, to do it repeatedly, cannot be lumped in with those people.
No, it's just so unfair to, like, compare someone like Chris Brown and, yes, the absolute, like crazy series of events that he has been part of and he has instigated. And for her to say that is just so, so strange to me. But it opens up that whole, the fact that Lucy and I and you, if you're listening to this, you know, we're in our own echo chamber when it comes to Chris Brown and anything like this, really. So if you're not familiar with what an echo chamber is, it's an environment where a person only encounters information or opinions that reflect and reinforce their own. So if you think about it, I mean, we've definitely talked about echo chambers a lot on this podcast, but if you think about it, you're all listening to this podcast, you're probably talking to other people that listen to this podcast or have read the media where we got the information for this podcast, and so we're all walking around with the same opinion, thinking that everyone else has the same opinion as us because the only people we talk to in our lives do have the same opinion as us because they're ingesting the same media and and similar.
You choose your friends based on values, and we exactly. share a lot of values, so your community gets bigger, but bigger because you're all like really liberal, you're really like empathetic, or we think the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. So when Kelly Rowland comes out and says this and it makes headlines, and it's just so interesting because like Luce and I, you're probably thinking, how the fuck can she think that? But it's probably because she's surrounded by other people. She's friends with Chris Brown. Like, she's surrounded by people saying the same thing as to, like, you know, he should be forgiven, whatever, whatever. And it was really interesting because, as I said before, Chris Brown was meant to be performing at the AMAs, and then last minute it was cancelled, and he posted a video of the rehearsal being like, you serious? And then commented, would have been the biggest AMA performance, but they cancelled me for reasons unknown. And then the guy that is the choreographer for that performance is a Kiwi guy called Lance Varley. And on his TikTok, he said, posted a very similar video saying, bruh, if only we got to perform this tonight at the AMAs. Oh, well, on to the next. And then I was looking through the comments of this video, expecting people to be like, well, it's pretty fucking obvious as to why you weren't able to perform this. But there was no one. Like, I scrolled through hundreds and hundreds of comments.
I was there watching her.
All pro Chris Brown and all like, what the fuck? Like, this is a tragedy to music. And all very pro Michael Jackson in the sense of like, we should be celebrating Thriller. Like, all of this shit. And it was honestly, there wasn't a single comment. And then Lucy and I were saying, if we posted that same caption with that video on Shit You Should Care About, we would have been absolutely shat on. We would have been cancelled.
Yes. It's just this really interesting, and we talk about it often, is that people that are trying to do good or objectively good with their platforms, mm-hmm. as soon as they make a step wrong, they're done. But people that have never tried to do anything good or stand up for things, or like, I don't know, they're just not in the same realm, they get almost like a free pass to just say or do what they're saying and feeling and thinking, and they don't get shit on because no one expects them
absolutely
to be better.
Because we're in the political realm, we're in like the kind of social ideology realm. Someone like Lance Savali, who's a choreographer, he's in the dancing realm. He's done a lot of choreography for, ironically, Rihanna and like Beyonce and all of the shit. And so a lot of the people following him are huge R&B fans. They fucking love dance. Chris Brown's a really good dancer. And so that's all they're caring about. But it's just really, really jarring to go from one audience with polarizing views to the one that you're seeing on this TikTok account. And it's just really, really shocking to see how different we are thinking about this whole situation. And as Lucy kind of mentioned in the introduction to this, it almost feels like we're missing something. It's like, how have these people forgotten so quickly what has gone on? Because it isn't that Chris Brown had a one-off incident.
No.
As Lucy will go into, it's been a chain of really fucked up events.
And it's just like, I mean, we have a really good episode that we're really proud of, and I think you should go and listen to, about separating the art and the artist. And this isn't really a case of like a really difficult grey area, in my opinion, because obviously everyone has their own backgrounds and reasons why they act out and reasons why they do things. Again, we actually spoke about this when we talked about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard in a really meaningful way. I think we had a good discussion about that. But in this case, when he has been like charged and had multiple restraining orders and been in multiple altercations time and time again, one in 2022. It's just like when you see a pattern like this and you haven't seen someone like come forward and try and be better and try and do better, it's just, I just don't know why this conversation isn't happening more.
But it really isn't happening. Like when I was doing this research, I was, you know, Googling things like Chris Brown, domestic abuse, media representation, like, you know, looking for one of like those really smart fucking like Vox or Vulture or whatever essays about like,
this professional says this because of this.
Yes, exactly. And this is why it happens. Or even like, this is the repercussion of allowing people who have a really muddy past, you know, to be a celebrity in 2022 and to have these fandoms and to be, you know, such influential people and to give them these platforms. Like, performing at the AMAs.
Yeah.
Like, there just wasn't really that much analysis, which is really interesting because there's so much when it comes to, like, Harvey Weinstein and Hollywood and sexual abuse and, like, the Me Too movement. But I think because Chris Brown, what happened with him and Rihanna, which is the most famous of his incidents, was domestic violence, which I think is potentially more difficult to talk about than sexual abuse.
And certainly, well, what we've seen, less spoken about,
yeah, for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's been really interesting, again, when I was trying to research, just the lack of analysis. Even, so we started analysing his Wikipedia page, which obviously can be added to and edited by anyone.
Mm.
And there is, like, very, very little, not in the first, like, big paragraph about who he is, and then not even when you get down to relationships and stuff, there is very, very little on his restraining order that has been put on him by one of his ex-girlfriends and the case with Rihanna.
Mm.
And when they do talk about Rihanna in the Wikipedia article, do you remember it was like, and Rihanna's come out and spoken about this and said in the past that he was a good boyfriend.
Yeah, and like,
why are you putting those quotes in there?
Which is always the case when it comes to domestic assault because, yeah, like, people always want to just blame it on the victims and blame it on the survivors and be like, oh, well, you went back and blah, blah, blah. And obviously we all know that it is not that easy.
Mm.
But going back to, like, the whole echo chamber thing, it's just so interesting because, like, Lucy and I reading that Wikipedia page, we're like, where is this? We know of Chris Brown through the Rihanna assault.
Yeah.
And obviously that's just not the case with his fans.
Yeah.
Like, they know him through the music and the dance scene and whatever it is. And it just shows, like, to them, it's just a tiny blip on his record.
Yeah.
But to us, it's all we know him for. So there's just, like, this huge gap between what people are seeing and what they're thinking. And it has real implications in society for, like, domestic assault and,
yeah,
the influence that these celebrities have over how other people live their lives,
mm-hmm,
which we will get into a little bit later on. But I think first, Luce, it would be really good to actually hear about what he has done,
yeah,
because we keep referencing it.
We do. And just again, before I get into this, honestly, tune out if you don't want to hear some quite detailed descriptions of domestic abuse, because I'm actually going to read the full police report from the Rihanna incident. First of all, though, so when I went to start my research, I started on a YouTube video made by E! News that was about, like, a timeline of the, mm-hmm, things he'd done. I had to click out of it because one of the first things they said was, like, that he was living up to his bad boy reputation by assaulting Rihanna. Like, that's not a bad boy reputation. Bad boy reputation is having a cigarette, like, on stage at your show. Bad boy reputation isn't beating up your girlfriend and, like, leaving her,
no,
almost, like, unrecognizable.
I saw a very similar sentiment. There was actually an interview with Chris Brown in The Guardian from 2013, and the way that started was kind of alluding to that most people think of him as the bad boy of R&B because of all of these allegations, and the language here is just so fucked up.
And it's really important, like, to note that language. Like, Zayn Malik used to be called the bad boy of One Direction
because he was moody and broody. Like,
but to be fair, he went on and had some allegations against Yolanda, so whether, I mean, like, but you can't just be fucking lumping bad boy with assault.
But it's just, like, shows the insidious nature of this sort of behavior in kind of music in general. It's just such a normal thing,
mm,
to happen that it just gets lightened by the language because
we don't, like, the media hasn't had to report on it that much, so they're just using the language they always use.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, no, these are very different things. So anyway, in February of 2009, the night before the Grammy Awards, Rihanna and Chris Brown had actually both been nominated for 2 awards each. They left a pre-Grammys party and got into a public altercation. Rihanna's face and arms had been covered in visible, like, bruises. He had been charged with battery following her hospitalization, but I'm going to read the police report. So a verbal argument ensued and Brown pulled a vehicle over in an unknown street. He reached over Robin, who is Rihanna, with his right hand and opened the car door and attempted to force her out. Brown was unable to force her out of the vehicle because she was wearing a seatbelt. When he could not force her to exit, he took his right hand and shoved her head against the passenger window of the vehicle, causing an approximate 1-inch raised circular contusion. So she got cut.
Mm-hmm.
Robin F. turned to face Brown and he punched her in the left eye with his right hand. He then drove away in the vehicle and continued to punch her in the face with his right hand while steering the vehicle with his left hand. The assault caused Robin's mouth to fill with blood and blood to splatter all over her clothing and the interior of the vehicle. Brown looked at Robin and stated, "I am going to beat the shit out of you when we get home. You wait and see." Robin picked up her cell phone and called personal assistant Jennifer Rosales. Rosales did not answer the telephone, but while her voicemail greeting was playing, Robin pretended to talk to her and stated, "I am on my way home. Make sure the cops are there when I get there." This statement was made while the voicemail greeting was playing, so it wasn't actually recorded. After Robin faked the call, Brown looked at her and stated, "You just did the stupidest thing ever. Now I really am going to kill you." Brown resumed punching Robin and she interlocked her fingers behind her head and brought her elbows forward to protect her face. She then bent over at the waist, placing her elbows and face near her lap in an attempt to protect her face and head from the barrage of punches being levied by Brown. Brown continued to punch Robin on her left arm and hands, causing her to suffer a contusion on her left triceps that was approximately 2 inches in diameter and numerous contusions on her left hand. Robin attempted to send another text message to her personal assistant, Melissa Ford. Brown snatched the cellular telephone out of her hand and threw it out of the window to an unknown street. Brown continued driving and Robin observed his cell phone in his lap. She picked up the cell phone with her left hand and before she could make a call, he placed her in a headlock with his right hand and continued to drive the vehicle with his left hand. Brown held Robin close to him and bit her on her left ear. She was able to feel the vehicle swerving from left to right as Brown sped away. He stopped the vehicle in front of an address and Robin turned off the car, removed the key from the ignition and sat on it. Brown did not know what she did with the key and began punching her in the face and arms. Brown began applying pressure to Robin's left and right carotid arteries, causing her to be unable to breathe. She began to lose consciousness. She reached out with her left hand and began to attempt to gouge his eyes in an attempt to flee herself. Brown bit her left ring and middle fingers and released her. While Brown continued to punch her, she turned around and placed her back against the passenger door. She brought her knees to her chest and began pushing him away. Brown continued to punch her on the legs and feet, causing several contusions. She began screaming for help and Brown exited the vehicle and walked away. A resident in the neighborhood heard Robin's plea for help and called 911, causing a police response. An investigation was conducted and Robin was issued a domestic violence protective order.
Holy shit.
So I think I had to read all of that out because I feel like that has just been completely lost in everything.
Oh, and like so fucked up in this interview with The Guardian, he calls it the Rihanna incident. Like, how can you take all of that, what you've just read out, and then like umbrella it as an incident? And like, this is then what hits the media, the media to the fans of Chris Brown, and they say, oh, it was just an incident, like brushing over it. But sometimes it is important to actually hear the details of these scenarios because how do you get past that?
Like, usually I feel like we don't have to read out full things like this because the media's done a pretty good job of making sure we don't forget the bad things that everyone does.
Mm.
For Chris Brown, there just seems to be a really different level of outrage. And like, we are not usually, like, we like to be quite balanced when it comes to this podcast especially, and we like to see, you know, all sides of things. But, like, when I was reading this, I was just like, if there's going to be anything to be outraged about, it's this.
Fuck yeah.
Like, just where is it?
Hearing the detail of this is just so jaw-dropping that, like, how do the fans just get past that by just saying, oh, well, that's just how it is?
Yeah. And when this happened and, like, it's – I don't think this would happen. I'd like to think the internet is a bit better than this now. But when it was happening, like, there was tweets that were like, I would let Chris Brown, like, beat me up. Like, you know, people that loved him. And Roxane Gay actually wrote, and I think this piece that Roxane Gay wrote, like, still has merit, but it wouldn't be, this was in, like, 2012 or even pre that, and I think it would be written differently now, but it was just, like, okay, we can't actually be making jokes and funny tweets like that. Like, you'd let. I know there's like this thing in fandoms with like Harry Styles or whatever. It's like, I would let him run me over in his car or whatever, like that. For someone that hasn't actually, you know, been
for
charged.
For it to be hypothetical situations is very different to actually have, you know, having done that shit.
Yeah. So, anyway, back to some more things that Chris Brown's done. So with Rihanna, he was charged with felony domestic assault. He pleaded guilty to one count of this assault. He had a plea deal, which meant that he didn't get time in jail in exchange for community service, counselling, a restraining order and probation. He was later actually accused of violating his restraining order and faking some of his community service and ordered to serve additional hours. Like, you've already literally got to get out of jail free card.
Fully.
And then you fucking fake your community service hours. Anyway, then in an interview with Robin Roberts in 2011, this was 2 years after the Rihanna incident, as Chris Brown called it, or the abuse, that we will call it. Chris Brown sat down with Robin Roberts for an interview on Good Morning America when the host, Robin, asked Chris Brown about the domestic abuse. Chris stormed off the set and he had broken a window in his dressing room when they went in to see. In 2013 in Orange County, Chris Brown allegedly shoved a woman called Deanna Gines to the ground. She claimed that she needed surgery following the incident because it left her with torn ligaments in her right knee. During a video shoot in Colorado in 2015, Brown forcibly ejected a woman from his bus when she refused to give up her cell phone. The woman, who was not a part of the video shoot that he was on, claimed that her phone was broken and filed a report for third-degree assault because she was pushed from the bus. In Las Vegas in 2016, Chris Brown avoided charges after a woman accused him of punching her in the face and taking her phone in a Las Vegas nightclub. She claimed she'd been trying to take a photo with Brown during a private party before the assault occurred. In 2016, again, there were claims that he'd brutally attacked his former manager, Mike G, and the singer's tour manager, Nancy Gosch, also claimed that he had threatened a similar attack against her, and so she cut ties with him. In August of 2016, again, Chris Brown was detained by the LA Police Department following a standoff at his home. A woman had accused the singer of threatening her with a gun after showing up to his house. He had a random altercation with Frank Ocean once over a parking, like, spot. In 2019, he and members of his entourage were detained in Paris after being accused of aggravated rape and drug possession. Brown denied the allegations and was released, but subsequently skipped a meeting with French investigators. His lawyer said that the date was inconvenient for Chris Brown, but that he wished to find a new date, and then the case was ultimately rejected because of insufficient evidence. And then this year, Chris Brown was sued for alleged drugging and rape. So he's being sued by a woman who alleges that he drugged and raped her on a yacht docked at Diddy's home in Miami. This is according to Rolling Stone. The complaint alleged that he led this woman down a corridor into a bedroom where he closed the door and prevented her attempts to leave. He allegedly undressed and raped her, ejaculated inside her, and it's also reported that he demanded that she took Plan B after this. She's seeking $20 million in damages. He's not issued a proper statement about this, but he posted on Instagram, "I hope y'all see this pattern of," and then cap, which means lies, "whenever I'm releasing music or projects, they try to pull some real bullshit." And it's just like, okay, like, I don't know if they are trying to pull the bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, I would say, like, assaulting, you know, people and stuff.
Yeah,
is
and
bullshit.
Also to me, it's like, imagine all of the other shit that he does that just doesn't get reported on because he's got so much power and so much money and,
like,
so
even
many resources.
He's literally done this too, and it shouldn't matter, but we were talking about this the other day when we first started researching. He's done this to the biggest, Rihanna, the biggest star in the world.
Yeah.
And there's been very little repercussions. Like, actually, there's been very little repercussions at punitive-wise in the fact that he didn't go to jail, etc. And then media-wise as well, he sort of got off scot-free. So it's just, it sort of makes sense why he feels a little bit untouchable and why he feels like people are coming for him.
Yeah. But absolutely, because these people have, in this Guardian interview that I keep referencing, that I will link in the newsletter, one thing that the interviewer says is something like, he obviously doesn't know what modesty is, or like things like that. And it's just like people with those personality traits, like he will genuinely think that he's owed this shit. It's the same with the R. Kelly conversation. It's like when these celebrities get so big and they have so much power and they're so used to getting exactly what they want and getting away with everything that they do, it's just like they start to think of themselves as untouchable, and when they do get touched, they turn it on other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just so interesting, the fact that the media isn't analyzing this shit, because there was actually one really good article in the Washington Post, but this is back in 2013. So, like, a lot of shit's happened since then. So, like, why isn't this keep getting brought up? Like, I just don't really understand. But this article, the headline is Rihanna and Chris Brown are proof that domestic violence is everyone's business. Because you know how they released that song, Nobody's Business.
Yeah.
Because basically with Rihanna, there's a series of interviews that show the transgression of the way she thought about this attack, which is really interesting. Mm. So in 2009, and it's a little bit of an insight into domestic abuse and the way that it can fuck with survivors' heads, I guess. So in 2009, this is like the same year as the attack, she was interviewed by Diane Sawyer, and they talked about how there's often 8 or 9 incidents of domestic violence before one leaves an abusive relationship. And then she went to say, I realized that my selfish decision for love could result into some young girl getting killed. I could not be easy with that part. I couldn't be responsible. If Chris never hit me again, who's to say that their boyfriend won't kill these girls? Don't react off love. Fuck love.
Wow.
So that ties in with this Washington Post article saying that, like, it shows that domestic violence is everyone's business, because it has such a ripple effect, especially when it's celebrities and people with huge amounts of influence. Like, if people see, oh, Rihanna got back with her abusive boyfriend, like, I can get back with mine. But, like, maybe they won't be so lucky. You just don't know. So that was in 2009. And then in 2012, she was talking to Oprah, and she said that she lost her best friend in one moment. And then she went to say, it was a weird, confusing space to be in, because I was angry as I was. I felt like he made that mistake because he needed help. And I wondered who's going to help him. No one's going to say he needs help. Everyone's going to say he's a monster without looking at the source. So you can kind of see, like, her thought process change over the years, which she brings up a valid point in terms of domestic violence doesn't happen in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, we have the power as a society to, like, cancel these people and not listen to their music anymore. But realistically, the only way that helps is in terms of media representation, that we're not seeing that this is okay. But we're not going to the root of the problem of domestic violence, which I'm not going to go into in this episode because it's just too big and complicated. But, you know, often people, and Chris Brown did have abuse in his childhood.
Mm.
So his parents divorced when he was 7, and then he moved in with his mum and her new husband in a trailer park, and he said he describes lying in bed listening to his stepfather beat his mother.
Mm-hmm.
So this is often the case with domestic violence perpetrators, is that they were exposed to it when they were a kid. Obviously, it's not a, what do we always say? It's not an excuse, but it is
an explanation.
As to how these things occur. So it is important to actually look into why Chris Brown did this, not even in terms of empathy, but in terms of, like the bigger conversation around domestic violence and, like, why the fuck it happens in society. And us not listening to Chris Brown's music anymore, like, doesn't actually help the root cause of this.
No.
If you have the brain space to think about these things, then it can be, this is what these conversations, this is how these conversations can be properly helpful, I think.
And this is why this Chris Brown, his whole existence and the media's, like, portrayal of it hasn't been helpful, because they haven't used this as a, let's really look at this and look at what's wrong and look at why this happened and how this happened. It's been a, oh, let's forget this happened. And I think one reason that maybe the media has sort of let him off lightly is because Rihanna has thrived in the face of all of this. If this had truly broken her, like if she had gone through this and then not been able to come back and not been able to be stronger, which she shouldn't have even had to do, then the media, I think, would keep harping on about how Chris Brown ruined Rihanna. Because Rihanna thrived in the face of it and she didn't have to, that's probably a reason why people have gone so easy on Chris Brown.
I absolutely agree. And also the fact that Rihanna then got back with him after, you know, this assault happened. And there's actually a quote from her in Rolling Stone magazine, which is once she got back with him, and she said, "I decided it was more important for me to be happy. I wasn't going to let anyone's opinion get in the way. Even if it's a mistake, it's my mistake. After being so tormented for many years, being angry and dark, I'd just rather live my truth and take the backlash. I can handle it," which is so, it shows that cyclical nature of thought in terms of like domestic violence, because it happened to her. She felt the repercussions of it in 2009, and she says how she can't, you know, make the selfish decision to stay with him and just think about herself. But then over time, you know, maybe there wasn't abuse for a while. There's actually in Healthline, they go and talk about the cycle of domestic abuse, and it's all about building tension. Then the incident will happen, and then the reconciliation happens, and then there's often a calm period after that for quite a long time. So I don't know, maybe
it's a trauma,
they were,
like trauma response, like it comes in cycles.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's really interesting to have watched that with Rihanna, and then it's obviously not on her to do a, you know, like any type of Oprah, like, you know, how Oprah goes and interviews like Prince Harry and Meghan and things like that. Like any type of big tell-all or interview about this now with hindsight probably would be helpful for a lot of people to see, a lot of Chris Brown fans to see.
Yeah.
But it's not on her to do that now that she's happy with
children. And for her to reopen that wound.
Yeah.
No, it's not at all. But yeah, I think that point, Luce, that you said that the media hasn't taken this and actually tried to do something helpful with it, because they've either just like disregarded it, or every article is like listing all of the things he's done, but more for like shock value and more for like almost entertainment purposes, which again isn't fucking helpful. Like,
it doesn't have the like paragraph beneath it all being like, even being like, so why are we still giving him awards, or why are we still, why are people still collaborating with him?
Yeah, absolutely. There's none of that. It's like the surface level, he's done this, 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 and this, and then there's no analysis after it. So,
even the Rolling Stone article where I got a lot of this from, it just like ended, I think, in 2017.
Yeah.
And just like ended with the last listicle thing with nothing else.
Yeah, genuinely. So like, what do you expect from your readers to take from that article? It's like, how is that, yeah, he's done all of this bad shit.
And then they're then, like, what am I meant to do with that?
What am I meant to do with that? And then how do I reconcile the fact that, yes, he's done all of that bad shit, but he's still being allowed to perform at the AMAs?
Yeah. Or then cancelled at the very last minute.
Or cancelled at the very last minute.
He says he doesn't know why.
Literally doesn't know why. Or the fact that they literally said it's not because he was performing it, it was the, like, him
combo
plus Michael Jackson. So if he hadn't been performing Michael Jackson, we'd have probably seen Chris Brown at the AMAs.
And then that would have been really interesting to see how everyone reacted to that. Because, like, even, like, usually people write into Shit You Should Care About and tell us things that we should write about or talk about, and, like, that's one of my favourite parts of this. No one said that we should write about Chris Brown and Kelly Rowland at the AMAs. That was you finding, or us watching it and finding it on our own. And we've actually always wanted to do a Chris Brown episode, because this is always mind-boggled us.
It really has, and we've always wanted to dive a little further into domestic violence. I've actually got one more thing kind of like unpacking domestic violence, especially in the Black community. So there was a woman called Bent Goodley who's an expert on this, and she says, while domestic violence impacts all communities, Black women are further burdened with the fear of going to the police and the courts because they don't want to turn Black men over to the criminal justice system. They just don't want to bring shame to the community, and they don't want others to think negatively about them and about Black men because they have the added dimension of racism and discrimination to contend with. It can be a crippling burden no matter your economic status.
Fuck
so
yeah. They're trying to protect a whole community and the way that the world views a whole group of people.
100%.
At their own, like, at their own danger.
Yeah, for sure. And like, you know, domestic violence, a lot of it happens because of systemic oppression. We see it in our own community here in New Zealand. You know, power is taken away from a whole community. And then what are they left? How are they meant to emotionally kind of get to grips with that? And unfortunately, domestic violence can be bred from that sort of systemic oppression. And that's what's happened in the States with the black community. And then it's just, again, a cycle because they don't want that name.
They don't want to be like, oh, we've lived up to what everyone has put on us for years and years and years. But then it's like, for these women who are being physically and emotionally hurt, where are they supposed to go?
And like, obviously it is definitely not just happening in the black community, but when we are talking about the Chris Brown and Rihanna domestic assault kind of case, it is something to mention because it's just a whole nother level of how to think about this in the grand scheme of the world, you know, not just celebrity. So it just is such a complicated topic again, but...
But Vox could do a really good job unpacking this.
I know. I just don't know why. Because it happens in across the world, the board. Across the world, in arts and music and wherever else, in sport fucking all the time.
Oh.
And these people just do tend to kind of get away with it. The accusations tend to just float away.
Or we forget about it because it's easier to, I don't know, like something and not think about it deeply or I don't know.
Absolutely. It can be too taxing for the consumer.
Yeah. Which obviously you've got to protect your peace, but you've got to do that while thinking about the communities that are being fucked over by us not talking about shit like this.
Exactly.
Anyway, Liv, after that incredibly heavy but really necessary episode, considering we've had such a hard time researching like the actual what actually went down with Chris Brown, what is on your radar this week?
Okay, Luce, what is on my radar is Wise Blood's new album and In the Darkness, Hearts Aglow. Do you know Wise Blood?
No.
She's this really beautiful musician. I don't actually know where she's... I think she's from America. Well, I don't know. She's just a really great musician, and her last album was called Titanic Rising, and it was fucking phenomenal, so I'm really excited to listen to her new one. I don't think she's, like, incredibly famous, but she's definitely got a bit of a following.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what's on my radar. What about you?
On my radar, and this is, like, a TikTok recommendation, but one that I'm quite excited to watch, is Wednesday with Jenna Ortega, who plays Wednesday Addams
from
the Addams Family.
Oh my gosh, I heard about this.
First of all, like, I'm obsessed. Remember when we watched The Fooler and Jenna Ortega just, like, amazing and so believable and just the most incredible actress?
Yes, absolutely.
Now she's put, like, a new twist on Wednesday Addams, who we've only – I haven't actually watched The Addams Family.
Me neither.
But we've only ever seen Wednesday Addams as, like, an 8 to 10-year-old, and this is, like, her teenage years. And Jenna had to learn, cello, German, archery, like dancing. She had to learn all this shit to do the role.
Oh my god.
She just leaned in. I've been seeing it all over TikTok. It's like, I really want to watch it. So I think it's on Netflix. I'm not sure. I'll have to go and look that up, but I am going to watch it.
It always bemuses me how fast actors and how well actors can learn these skills.
I mean, she was doing this for 8 months, actually.
That's
but
true.
It's still fast to learn the fucking cello.
No, it's still so fast. Like, people fucking practice for 8 years. Literally. It's just like...
And she, like, choreographed. There's this dance scene that's just amazing. And she choreographed it herself. She worked with Tim Burton really closely. And she like, she is Corpse Bride energy. Like, she really is. Oh, my God. She's amazing. Also, just because she's, like, a Latina and she's playing this role that was like she's reclaiming, and I don't know, it's just amazing.
Yeah,
so
no, that's
what I've seen.
That's really exciting. Definitely on the to watch list.
Yes, Liv, as always, thank you for coming and helping us break down things that aren't always easy to break down.
I'm honestly like driving in my car on the way here, like checklisting in my head all of the things that we're going to say on this episode, and it can definitely be overwhelming.
Oh my god, can it ever?
Again, these conversations don't have to have a fucking ending.
We have the privilege of feeling like we get to do something with what we learn, which is always the bit that gets me like through the hard, confusing convos.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much for listening, And thank you so much to Samuel, our wonderful podcast producer.
Woo! And we'll see you in the newsletter or next week or when we next see you.
Wonderful. We will see you then. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.